from the KERA Newsroom. I'm Justin Martin. In a few minutes, a look at the dwarf planet Pluto through the lens of Star Wars. We'll start tonight with an unusual summit meeting. Five North Texas mayors got together in Fort Worth today to talk about what's known as the skills gap. That's the difference between the skills needed to do a job and what kids leave school prepared to do. All five mayors agreed businesses and schools have their work cut out for them. Here's Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings.
We are the biggest technology employer in the state of Texas. Not Austin, not Houston. People cannot find great employees. Now the word is going to start to get out, and those people are going to stop coming and stop moving here.
A recent study by J.P. Morgan Chase found nearly 40,000 open mid-level jobs in healthcare and technology. Fort Worth Mayor Betsy Price said job training is one answer.
Unfortunately, not all our kids are going to college. A lot of them need to get a technical job. They need the opportunity, or maybe they'll go to college later. We need to work hard on that. We have to remove the barriers.
Across Texas, public schools look considerably different than they did just two decades ago. There are more kids with a wider variety of economic backgrounds. KEIA's Sam Baker talked with Ross Ramsey of the Texas Tribune about what he found surprising in a new set of statewide numbers.
Start off by telling me a little bit about this annual snapshot report from the Texas Education Agency. I hadn't heard of that before.
They've been doing it for a long time. It's one of those quiet government reports that comes out every year, and it's basically a statistical look in pretty good detail of all of the school districts in the state and all of the charter schools. So this year's was 1,227 districts, which includes some 200 charter schools.
Hmm. Now, to those who bother to read them over the year, is the latest report a surprise?
Anytime you read these, there are a bunch of numbers in there that sort of leap out at you, that you have certain expectations of what the schools might look like, and then you look at the numbers and you see something that might be quite different from your expectations. The other thing is, if you look at them today and you look at a report from 20 years ago, the changes in the schools are big and dramatic.
Give me an example of a surprise or two that stuck out at you.
The thing that really leapt out of the numbers and has for years is the difference in size of districts. You know, most of the students, or about half the students, are in a very small number of districts. And then, you know, more than 1,000 of the 1,200 districts only educate half the students.
Well, the state's population has grown since the 90s, so I guess a large increase of kids in school overall, what is it, from about 3.7 million to about 5 million, that isn't so unusual, I guess?
The growth itself isn't unusual. Like you say, the state's grown like crazy. You can see it, you know, any major city when you're driving down the freeway. But the composition of the students is dramatically different. So the population of students in Texas who are not economically disadvantaged has grown 3.7%, which really isn't that much over 20 years. But the population of economically disadvantaged students in our schools has grown 80%, which is, you know, pretty dramatic.
It's now, what, 3 out of every 5 students?
Right. It's about 60%.
How or why does this statistic continue to get worse?
Well, you know, it continues to grow. It's a reflection of, you know, who's in the public schools and, you know, where the growth in the state has been. You know, to some extent, you know, it's been in, you know, some of our growth has been in low-wage jobs. Some of it's been in better jobs, but a lot of it's been in low-wage jobs. A lot of people have stagnant incomes, a lot of families, and an income that might 20 years ago not have qualified a kid as economically disadvantaged, that same income today might, because of inflation.
But, you know, the numbers in this report didn't come out of the blue. The situation's been evolving over the last 20 years. Shouldn't we have expected the legislature to do something?
Yeah, this is one of those things, you know, and you can find these in other areas of government, in transportation, in water, infrastructure, and things like that. This is one of those things that if you watch numbers over time, you can see, you can get a picture of something that you wouldn't ordinarily get if you were just taking anecdotal information. And frankly, a lot of us, you know, in the media, in politics, and, you know, and citizens don't look at the details of these things and don't really know how the school systems operate, what they really look like, what kind of kids we're trying to educate.
Ross Ramsey, thank you for being with me.
Thanks as always.
leading figure in the theater world, is heading back to his roots in North Texas. Doug Wright, who is a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright, will be an artist in residence at UNT this fall and next spring. Wright grew up in University Park before writing the Broadway musicals Grey Gardens and The Little Mermaid. He also wrote the drama I Am My Own Wife, which won a Tony Award and the Pulitzer. This week, Wright wrote a eulogy for Jack Alder, the late co-founder of Theater 3. Wright started acting at Theater 3 when he was 14.
I spent the bulk of my childhood in these halls or in the Dallas Theater Center, and those two institutions enabled me as a nervous young gay kid in Texas to survive childhood.
You can read Wright's eulogy for the late Jack Alder at artandseek.org. On its way to Pluto, NASA's New Horizons probe traveled more than 3 billion miles. A caller today on Think posed a question to astronomer Mike Brown. How to get there without hitting anything? And he said, we've all been watching too much Star Wars.
Come on, Chewie!
You know, we've all watched Star Wars and know that as you fly through the asteroid belt, you have to dodge asteroids left and right.
What are you doing? You're not actually going into an asteroid field.
It'd be crazy to follow us, wouldn't it?
But the Hollywood version of the asteroid belt and the solar system is not anything like reality. In the solar system, if you want to try to visit an asteroid on your way to flying to, say, Jupiter or beyond Jupiter, you have to try really hard.
Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
You sit around and calculate every asteroid orbit and say, well, maybe if we tweak the spacecraft just a little bit, we can get a little close to this one and take a few images. Space is essentially empty. So the probability of getting hit by any kind of tiny asteroid that could do damage is essentially zero most of the time.
I see your point, sir.
And I say most of the time because the one worry was that there might actually be debris right around Pluto, and that it could have been that the spacecraft got destroyed right as it flew past Pluto. So this is why a couple of nights ago, everybody was excited to get that first little carrier signal back from New Horizons that said it made it past Pluto okay. It had all the data on its memory stick, and we'll be getting those data back over the many, many months to come.
Mike Brown is a professor at the California Institute of Technology. Back in 2006, Pluto was reclassified as a dwarf planet, in part because of his research. Think re-airs tonight at 9, or you can listen to the podcast at kera.org/think. By the way, all lanes of the Dallas North Tollway just north of Interstate 635 near the Galleria have been reopened. The crash involving a tractor trailer earlier has been cleared. It closed most of the tollway for about 3 hours. This evening, you can expect mostly clear skies with a low around 78. Tomorrow should be sunny with a high near 98, and tomorrow night, mostly clear, low near 78. It's 98 degrees in Dallas and Fort Worth, 95 in Tyler and Wichita Falls. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin.